Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and again this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill.
Hello, everybody.
Our show today will include guests Nathan Seckinger, a coordinator slash planner of the Occupy Regina event, and we have Dan Lindsay of Committee for Future Generations. Mona and I have been out to the site in Victoria Park a few times, and on Wednesday evening we went to talk to the people who are occupying Regina. We have a few clips of their thoughts, and we'll hear them throughout the show today. That's Michael McDonald taking it to the streets, and welcome everyone.
And we're here because people in Regina have been taking it to the streets. This is Mona Hill on Human Rights Radio. Welcome Dan Lindsay and Nathan Seckinger.
Hi,
hello. We want to talk about Occupy Regina. Maybe I can start with Nathan. Nathan, ever since the occupations have started on a global perspective, particularly in North America, the media have been portraying the protesters as people who have really not known what they're doing, not known what their reason is for being out there on the streets, having a lack of a clear message to send out. And I'd like to, you know, sort of, could you address this? And tell us what you think about this and what the people in Regina are there for.
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to just sort of point up something about the way that I was introduced at the beginning when Jim called me a coordinator, because I think that that speaks to the problem with the way this whole discussion has been framed. The mass media has come to relate better to corporations with spokespeople than it does with individuals. And so what's happened over, you know, there's a sort of a drift that's happening over the last several decades of individual voices becoming progressively more diminished in the face of big corporate bodies like unions, private sector business and megacorps, mega churches, giant government agencies, things like that. And all of those sorts of organizations are able to produce singular key messages because they have people who are paid and appointed to do the talking, right? What we have here is what I believe to be the birth of a culture. It's a massive worldwide group of individuals who are stepping forward and saying, you know, none of our messages have been handled by any of these spokespeople. So we're just going to talk for ourselves. And now the problem with that is that whenever the media wants to interview people, they're going to get a different person, right? And so I don't want to come across here as being a representative or a spokesperson for this. I did not start this. I didn't start the one in Regina. I'm okay with saying that people saying that I'm a coordinator because I've done some assistance in coordinating, but I speak for myself. I don't speak for anyone else, and I haven't been authorized to speak for anyone else. So I want to be really clear about that.
Okay.
I think that what's interesting about this for me is, I've been involved in tons of various types of activism for a long time, you know, human rights-related work, harm reduction-related stuff, artist group things, a lot of work with gay and transgender liberation work locally and nationally. And what I've seen consistently is a progressive frustration emerging where people are sort of being, how do I explain this, silenced because they don't know how to play the spin doctor game.
Good point.
Okay. And so the only people who can do this are people who have a lot of experience doing that kind of talking. Mm-hmm. And what's growing in our culture is this sort of this notion that if you don't have a completely airtight position that's absolutely impenetrable to any kind of criticism, then you must be an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, most people can't keep up on that level all the time. They don't have time to sit there and watch the news all day.
Well, this is why you have people paid, you know, upwards of $180,000, $90,000 a year, and that's their job.
Right.
12 hours a day to maintain that.
Right.
That's a full-time job where they have resources dedicated, as you're saying, by the corporations to be the spokespeople. They have a whole department.
Yep. They have a team.
Yeah, exactly. It takes them 3 weeks to draft up a letter of four paragraphs.
So it's someone totally from the media goes out to an Occupy site in any town and asks the average person that's out there with their own concerns about the issues.
Isn't that wonderful?
They may not respond the same way that the media is expecting them to.
But that's the beauty of it, because the reason I went up and put my tent up there on the last weekend on Saturday is totally different from the person I was camping beside.
Tell me about what you
said. But our issues are, you know, are just as important and just as valid as everybody else's issue. It may not even concern me.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean I cannot honor and respect the things that are troubling that person? That's what we're supposed to be doing in a real democracy.
Okay. So why did you go pitch your tent on Saturday last week?
Well, I bugged out of my union meeting at lunchtime. I was at my AGM, and I had to go down because I just support the whole movement globally that's happening. And for me, it was, you know, many issues. As you know, my activism and working in housing and homelessness is directly related to, you know, the government stand and the corporation stands, and this is about how corporations have embedded itself into the everyday lives of our lives, everything we do. Also, there's, you know, from the committee point of view, the whole issue, which was a prime example of the whole nuclear waste issue that we uncovered beginning of this year and did the walk from Pine House and whatnot,
right,
about how a corporation can work its way in, and we'll just use, you know, the uranium nuclear industry, how it's taken over basically the University of Saskatoon. It's all connected. So you have one company that is in control of every aspect of an industry, which is deciding the future of our province, not the people, not even the government. It's a corporation that is deciding the future of the province of Saskatchewan. We had everybody that was connected with the mining and nuclear industry sitting on the board of the UDP, which provided the recommendations to the government of Saskatchewan, which this government is now unfolding and going ahead with. The people of Saskatchewan stood up and said, no, we don't want nuclear reactors. So now they're going to put their money into studying what they call small nuclear reactors, which then they say to, you know, bring in the full life cycle of the nuclear industry here in the province, which is nuclear waste storage, nuclear waste processing. And if you look at all the companies, Bruce Power, which produces the nuclear reactors in Ontario, who is the owner? Cameco. Who is the owner of the mines? Cameco. Who's pouring all their dollars into the University of Saskatchewan? Cameco. Who sits on the board of directors and also is a governor of this University of Saskatchewan is a person, one person working for both agencies. So this is how insidious it is, and that we're going to become. And we're not a nuclear-producing province.
You know, before I left work to come and do the show today, my boss said to me, if you say anything on the radio show today, I want you to say this, that corporations do not work in running a democracy.
No,
corporations do not work in helping the homeless find homes.
They
corporations don't do that. The people do that. And consequently, he wanted me to say that.
And that's the disconnect, yeah. What everyone's coming out to say and occupy on various issues, be it housing issues or you know, land claims from an Aboriginal perspective or revenue sharing of resources. All those topics come under that because it's the government who is supposed to ensure that that happens. So we've had this big disconnect where now the governments are actually being run by the corporations and not the people.
If
so we've
gone full. Here in this meeting today, and you said that, would there be any politicians who would say, no, that's not true?
Well, they'd all say that.
They would say it's not true?
They'd all say that, but if you just look at the reality of it.
Okay.
And I would say that this is not a partisan issue. I mean,
yeah.
There's parties want to play this, you know, off of each other, but we see this across the spectrum from the so-called right to the so-called left. There is a general problem of corporatization happening across the board because it's the nature of the kind of work that they do. That, you know, they have to be able to, for example, pay for their campaign literature, for one thing. They need to be able to pay for travel and things like that. So just to get elected in the first place, this kind of support is needed. Then once you get into office, there's all sorts of issues having to do with, you know, sustainable growth for your economy and that kind of thing. And so if individual politicians try and take a stand and say, well, you know, this is not what my personal moral conviction tells me is what is best for my constituents and best for the community I represent, whether it be local, national, whatever, they get themselves into a lot of political danger because they now have to compete against a giant propaganda campaign that's also being funded by the private sector. So it's very easy to sort of spin everything they say as being sort of, you know, against the economy, as though you know, the only thing that mattered was you know, this constant increase in GDP.
Right.
Development for the sake of development is not necessarily a good thing. We do have to abide, you know, actually look at what it is we're developing and why. Just because you're going to make $1 million, you can make $1 million somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean this might be just the easiest way to make $1 million.
Can I just add to that?
Yeah,
I want to say a little bit about the language that we use to talk about this, because there's a lot of I hear a lot of talk about average income and how it's improving and that sort of thing. And you need to understand that there's more than one kind of average. So, you know, remembering back a long way back to my high school math classes, there are basically four different types of average, and I'm not really going to go into the details of them, but the one that most people think of as average is actually the mean. That's where you take all of the numbers and you add them together and then you divide them by the number of numbers. So if you have like 1, 3, 5, and 7, you add those numbers up together and then you add them by, divide them by the...
By four.
Yeah. That's one kind of average. But the median average is the number that's exactly in the middle between the highest and the lowest. And, and when you look at that, you often get a very different number. So what's happening is the median income is slightly increasing over time. And this is basically the halfway mark between the sort of haves and have-nots, right? The people who are rich are generally the ones who are above the median, and the people who are poor or approaching poverty are those who are below. It is increasing. So in general, there is more income for everybody.
But what about on the other side of that?
But if you look at the mean average, which is the one that usually people talk about, that's like the GDP per capita, that one is going up at a much higher rate, especially in the U.S. where it's skyrocketing. But even here in Canada, what's happening is certain small groups or individuals are making so much money that when you add that in and then divide it equitably, it makes the numbers go up. So the way that I saw this explained, the simplest example was, imagine that you have 10 people in a bar and all of them make, you know, between $32,000 and $37,000 a year. So their median income is somewhere like roughly around $35,000, right? Now imagine that Bill Gates walks into the room and he's pulling in, you know, millions and millions. It's going to make your average mean income skyrocket.
Right.
But the median isn't actually changing very much. So if you only look at the GDP per capita, it makes it look like everybody's prospering when they're not.
So is this all a big lie?
Well,
it's being perpetrated? Well, I call it an illusion.
It's an illusion. You know, like we get out there and we say, we created 6,000 or 600,000 new jobs. We're doing better than everybody in the world. But what kind of jobs are we creating? Sure, we have a little bit more in the resource sector that, you know, some good paying jobs, but the majority of the jobs are part-time jobs, minimum wage jobs, the large majority of them.
I'd just like to jump in here for a minute and play a clip from one of the guys from Occupy Regina and what his definition of the 99% is.
Daniel Johnson.
And you're from Regina?
Yeah.
During all these Occupy different cities and Occupy places around the world, there are signs, there are people, everyone's talking about how we are the 99%. What does that mean to you?
Essentially, this whole thing is about democracy, because at the end of the day, democracy means majority rules, and it's very clear that, you know, locally, provincially, nationally, internationally, we do not have a society in which the majority rules. Because a society in which the majority rules would not be saying that the environment, the future survival of life on this planet is somehow less important than an economy that isn't benefiting everybody. A majority wouldn't be supporting an economy that demands constant growth at our expense, as opposed to constant... if it were growing in a way that was benefiting the majority, then maybe. But instead, we have this economic growth at all costs as an end in itself that's obviously not benefiting the majority. So clearly we don't have a democracy. And that's something really fundamental, and it's not left or right.
So there's one point of view.
Well, that's totally true. You look at it, it doesn't matter provincially, federally, or whatever, when we you know, the guy who wins the election at the end of the day saying, well, I got a majority government. But if you look, how do you get, you know, when you take in the people that didn't show up and vote, people all from the different parties, you got the majority, but in reality, you only got 39% of the vote.
Right.
That's not the majority. You know, what about the other, you know, 61%?
In Canada, all they needed to do was win in the last federal, election was achieve a bigger minority than everyone else's minority, both in terms of the number of ridings achieved, but also within a riding. So you may not even necessarily have the majority of votes within your own area. All you need to do is have a bigger group than everyone else, that will get you that riding.
Yeah.
And then if you get enough of those, you don't need a majority of them either. You just need a big enough minority. So you end. So this is what happens when you have a fragmented culture where there's a lot of different ideological groups pushing.
I did a little math, and I figure that the Harper government got about 25% of the eligible Canadian voters.
That more or less matches with what I've seen from the number juggling that I've looked at. And the job of a good government, when it's faced with this kind of cultural fragmentation, is to find ways to integrate and unify the community so that everybody's on the same page and everybody's approaching something like a consensus. Now, you're never going to make everybody happy. Everybody knows that.
Right.
But what you can do is find some common values that everybody is trying to aspire toward and then start prioritizing those.
And that's true. It's like, you know, there's... you know, we get into this party partisan politics, and it's like, okay, Mona, you say this, but you're on the other side of the fence, so I can't support it.
Right.
I think it's just common sense. We're talking about, you know, I elect this guy in my riding to look after our interest, and I want him to take our interest, you know, to wherever he's going and represent us. Not once he gets there, turn around and say, I've got to tell what they're doing in Toronto. Because, you know, Saskatchewan and Toronto is two different places. So... you know, we have to, and I think Jack Layton was on that about, like, it, you know, the other guys could have a good idea, and if it's a good idea, we can support that, and it's a, if it's good for the whole, we don't have to get into, you know, bickering and dividing on all fronts.
Earlier, one of you mentioned something about homelessness, and one of the things that Jim and I discovered when we were out at the Occupy Regina rally was that there are quite a few people who are down there who are homeless people in Regina who are
I'm hoping to get a lot more.
Because there's food now. There's a place for them to go to sleep because there's even a community tent that's been put up. And so how does this fit into all of this? I mean, we've been complaining about this for a couple of years now about the homelessness issue in Regina.
And Woodward's, and you do get the safety. When we went down there, we ended up bringing in community nurses. There was food. There was safety because then people got together. They got out of the alleys. They got out of the dumpsters, and they were safe because they were able to come and congregate in one place. So this is going to happen. I hope it happens because we really got to draw the attention. Again, that's one of many issues is the whole homelessness issue.
Right. I've got 2 minutes left before the break, and I'm just going to read a few things that are happening in Regina this week that you might be interested in, and we'll do the first one. It's tomorrow. Occupy Regina is going to be having a rally and a march through the park, I guess, and then at the northeast corner you're going to be meeting. Where is the march going to be going, downtown, or does anybody know?
No, I've been,
okay.
I'm
all right, well, then I'll read what I've got.
Yeah.
Okay, it says, the brave occupiers have been camped outside for close to a week now. There will be a wide range of speakers and to march through the streets in support of the Occupy Regina movement and, of course, those worldwide. The speakers include Shauneen Peat on Learning Us and Them, Our Colonial Past and Complex, Racialized Now. John Conway on What the Hell Do We Want? Lisa Smith on 10% of the 99%, finding space for gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, and queer people. And there's another one happening tomorrow at the university, which is a Walk for Hunger at 10 a.m. outside Riddell Center. The Walk for Hunger is dedicated to raising funds to help those suffering in the Horn of Africa. So you could actually do both because the walk downtown, the rally at the park is from 2 to 4. The Walk for Hunger is at 10 a.m. And we'll be back after the break.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds.
are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
As I guess it'd be started off as that we're approaching winter in one of the cooler parts of the world. So currently we're dealing with temperatures that are at night. We've been really lucky for this time of year. Usually we're already into the thick of the snow. We're only in the low Celsius tonight, I think, and we've had a few nights where it's dipped into the single digit negatives. Yeah, there's no heat. We haven't been allowed to set up any heat. That is part of our conditionals with the city right now, pending us talking to the fire department about safety regulations that would have to be in place. So it is below freezing, and we're camped out right next to the tallest buildings, or a couple of the tallest buildings in Regina. So there's a definite wind tunnel effect, and the wind chill factor on top of that makes it feel like it's minus 20 sometimes out here.
And we're back. This is Human Rights Radio on CJTR, and that clip you heard was from Occupy Regina last Wednesday night when Jim and I went out and interviewed a few people about what they were doing there, why they were there, and it was damn cold, and the wind was really blowing that night.
Well, I'm still getting over my cold from the weekend.
Yeah,
the
you got pretty
there.
Sick, didn't
but
you, Dan?
Yeah, and I can't stay down there every night.
Sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want people to know when they see, oh, there's only like 10 people, 12 people, 20 people. Well, that one person, one of them, they're representing me. And other people that I know that cannot be there for
right.
whatever reason
right.
to be out there and actually, you know, camp and occupy 24/7. So that one person is actually representing lots of people. And people have to remember that when they just see, oh, it's not a huge group. And they were talking about that. I think CBC was talking about that, saying, oh, there's only, you know, 50 people here, 200 people there, 1,000 people there. That's not really a big movement. And they're trying to compare it to the movement out of the 60s or the civil rights movement. And you got to look at the big picture. It's how many hundreds of thousands of people are doing this around the world.
Right. Mm-hmm.
These are just small little individual camps, little mm-hmm. satellites of a much bigger movement.
And the fact also that there's plenty of people who are supportive of these occupations that actually have jobs, that work. It's not just the people who are homeless,
yeah,
and it's not just the people who are jobless, but that they have jobs and that they are trying to make a living, and they do support it, so they go and they support it when they're able to.
That's one of the myths that I really would like to explode, because there's this sort of idea that the only people who have an interest in doing this are the ones who want handouts, and we hear that all the time. This is becoming, there's a lot more and more of this kind of language, and we hear people shouting at us, get a job, get a job.
Isn't it, Nathan? It's the opposite. Most of the people that are doing this are the people that have the jobs, that are paying the taxes.
Most of the people have some of us have more than one job. There's a lot of working
students. They got, you know, they had their days are booked. It's the opposite this time.
Because one of the things that's happening is, you know, I talked about the difference between mean and median income, but the other thing that's happening is that the cost of living itself is skyrocketing. And, I mean, if you look back over the last couple of decades, you see this really terrifying trend. I mean, something, if you look at gas prices, for example, we're talking about like 700% increases, right? And so the trajectory, if you look at the charts over the last, say, 100 years or so, the last time we were getting increases like this was like, you know, the late 1800s.
Wow.
So we're talking about Dickensian economic conditions now that are starting to happen. It is people who are actually working and still falling behind because only the wealthy can afford to keep up with the cost of inflation.
True. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's, that's what I say, you know, the statistics don't lie, but I like to say liars use statistics because you can spin them to mm-hmm. say anything you
exactly.
want. As you're saying, by using what type of average are you going to use on that?
Right.
Because the reality is, and that's I try to keep it simple, and I've been saying this, they say, oh, Saskatchewan, we're booming. And as I said many times, look around, who is it booming for?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if you go anywhere, I don't care what neighborhood you walk in Regina, it's not booming for the rank and file citizens. It's booming if you're a land developer. It's booming if you're a corporation leader and CEO. In this case, I'll even say if you're a hotel, because the hotels mm-hmm. are booked. But if you're not in those businesses, it's not booming for
a tradesman
people.
Who's coming from another province where their economy is tanked. So
I've done that twice now. I moved across the country from BC in the mm-hmm. 80s when it died, and we went to BC, we went to Ontario and back. And yeah, we got a better paying job. We didn't get any further ahead. We actually fell further
yeah.
behind because I went from paying $500 a month rent to $1,000 a month rent.
Right.
So I went from $10 to $20. So in the end, I changed was my location and the fact that I had a job and I could sustain my
family. It's a matter of trying to be
sustenance, right? So nobody
yeah.
got ahead.
Yeah.
Again,
and, you know, it's indicative of what you're talking about is I've got a list in front of me of all these activities that are occurring in Regina this week coming up. There's four of them right in front of me that have to do with poverty and homelessness.
Well, that's a huge issue, and it's not
yeah.
just Regina. It's all, and it's not even Saskatchewan. You know, we're still facing this on a national level. We're still the only country in the Western Hemisphere that doesn't have a national housing strategy. Like, how go figure? And we're supposed to be Canada, and we're supposed to be so good and so cool.
There's another issue that I think needs to be sort of on the table here in terms of how social programming is funded as well. Because, I mean, it's not like poverty is a new issue. This is something, as
right.
I'm sure you know, that we've all been struggling against this for a very long time. What they used to call a welfare state culture, right? A capitalist model that still has some compassion for those who have less money. There are ways that you can afford to be poor, because the government and the economy and the culture does not expect low-income people to be able to provide for all of their needs. They do the best that they can, and then we also provide extra help, like, you know, employment insurance and things like that as well. Now I understand that those are problematic and they don't...
Well, I might take umbrage with they do the best that they can, that the government does the best that it can, but go on.
Okay,
go ahead. I just had to say that.
But I'm saying this is the theory behind it,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
And what
the
there was a point where we were moving in a trajectory toward better service provision for people. And then at some point we just kind of like completely, you know, stopped the car and turned around and started going back the other way. Because now we're getting to the point where it was bad enough when people were poor but still had social support. But now we're cutting off the social support as well.
Right.
Right? Because of the argument that, you know, that's bad for the economy because we're overtaxing big business and so that's slowing down corporate growth and all of this sort of thing. So we can't afford to pay for these things like, you know, soup kitchens. Yeah,
well,
so,
if it wasn't
so
for
where
the, you know, the church groups and the people of Regina, I can't speak about PA or Saskatoon because
right.
I live here,
right.
but I know, you know, working through, you know, Carmichael and other places, if it wasn't for the rank and file citizens and the church groups, we'd be really in a disaster
right.
zone because they are the ones that are keeping the soup kitchens going.
Right.
They are the ones that are doing bake sales and things and raising money for organizations like Carmichael and Souls Harbor.
And a lot of those people are becoming low income because they are low income.
Right.
So now we're all, you know, it's like the poor.
Well, it's low income that's supporting the low income.
Well, I was going to say
yeah.
that. And, you know, every time someone contacts me about supporting their cause, I'm finding over the past few years there's more and more and more. So every year I'm being asked by more and more organizations to help support the poor, help support poverty, whatever poverty entails. We need more of your money to do this. I'm running out of money. My wages haven't necessarily gone up, but my expenses have.
And, so and that's what draws people to look at what's going on, like, say, in Saskatchewan with the corporations. You know, like, I'm not saying tax the corporations out of existence, but you have, you know, we do have these resources. They're non-renewable. Once they're gone, they're gone. And you're not going to get another penny out of them, you know. So we have to, you know, get some money out of that to play, you know, to pay for some of these things, right, to look after some of these things. We cannot have a government just making continually pandering to corporations.
You know, issues like poverty and disability are usually charitable causes that even the most conservative spenders can get behind. So when poor bashing starts becoming fashionable, that's a good sign that all of the other special needs issues have already been trashed.
Okay.
You know, I mean, like, even the most hardcore, you know, fiscally right, you know, extremist still believes in things like supporting orphanariums and things like that as a general rule. That's going out the window now. Yeah. I'm actually finding, I've seen articles written by Christian theologians claiming that Jesus would have been opposed to charitable causes.
Really?
Yeah, and they're citing scripture, and they're trying to argue that the socialists have twisted the meaning of the Bible, and that actually the Christianity is about, you know, this authoritarian control model, and there's nothing in there for helping the. You know, I mean, it's a really
weird Bush guys.
Cultural direction that we're going because caring for other people is coming to be seen as some kind of a spiritual failure.
I think it's also, in some respects, being seen as a weakness in people. Mm-hmm. Do you have another clip you wanted to play? We're going to play another clip from when we went out to the Occupy Regina site to get somebody else's opinion.
I've been here since the beginning, and before the beginning, actually. I was at all of the planning meetings that were held ahead of time. My purpose in being here is partly just to facilitate the thing. I think that there's a lot of important work that's going to come out of this organization.
Such as what?
Well, what I see when I look around this place is I see a whole lot of people who've become disenfranchised with the way democracy is working today. And I see people that, rather than wanting to line up at the polls and vote for somebody that they know isn't going to change anything anyway, they're trying to actively engage the democratic process again and bring it back to the people. And I think that that's a very important facet of this particular movement.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
I saw a sign, and I forget what Occupy city it was from. Mm-hmm. It was an older fella saying, the system isn't broken. It's designed this way.
Very interesting.
And you know, and it was good because it was, oh, it's, you know, it's broken.
Yeah.
And it's designed this way.
Right.
And it has been for a while. And we can see if you just look from, you know, as you're going back, go from the 60s, from, you know, the boom time,
right,
you know, up to now, how... Look, as you said, the car is turned around. We're headed backwards, and for whatever reason, not only are we headed backwards, each week or month we're pressing down heavier on the, you know, we're gaining speed as we're going backwards. Yeah. It's really
Nathan.
Speeding
you
up.
Had an experience, you know, when you talk about you say that the system was designed this way, and I think part of the problem is that the average citizen doesn't know that. They don't realize it's been designed this way. And so consequently, when they're faced with any changes or anyone who seems to be, quote unquote, bucking the system, it's very upsetting, and they don't really understand what's going on, I think. And you experienced that this week, Nathan, when someone really got upset with you for being in Victoria Park at the Occupy Regina site.
It was a really strange situation because I actually came into this situation sort of halfway through. There was a bunch of stuff that had already happened before I even got there. And what basically happened was there was a woman who was walking her dog in the park, and one of the occupiers had complimented her on her dog. And this woman began to panic because she was offended that one of these people had actually spoken to her and started yelling and swearing. And there was some other stuff that seems to have gone on, but I didn't really get the full story on it, so I can't comment on that.
Right.
But the police had to be called, and basically, by the time I got there, what I was told was, you know, she's not allowed to talk to us, we're not allowed to talk to her. And I thought, well, that's not very democratic at all, is it? So, you know, I spoke to the woman, and who by this point was spinning around in circles, yelling at the top of her lungs, "You don't belong here, you don't belong here, get out of here, you're making this park unpleasant." And I said to her, you know, this is a public space, and we have a right to be here, and you have a right to be here and protest against us, and we have a right to be here and protest as well. And if you want to put up a tent, you can. And I asked her, you know, what are you mad at? And she said, someone wanted to touch my dog. So she started yelling about this and how, you know, we didn't have a right to be in her comfort space.
Okay. That's interesting because it reminds me of that sign that people are posting, and I don't know if it comes which Occupy it comes from, but it was like, excuse us, we're just we don't, what was it, we don't want to change the world.
We're sorry for the inconvenience.
That's
we're trying
it.
To change the world.
Yes, yeah. We're sorry for the inconvenience. We're trying to change the world.
That's but that it. Happened the exact same thing, different story, but the same principle. I think that was Saturday night. Somebody was saying, you know, I pay taxes so I can come and hang out in the park.
Right.
And then somebody in our group said, well, we pay taxes so we can come and occupy this park.
Right.
And we have just as much right to be there as anyone else. And so far, if you look, it's been clean, that everyone's been orderly.
Right.
I do know for a fact is anybody that's showing up there, because we get a lot of street people coming down there, and they might have had a Mickey or something.
Yeah.
They are told to leave the site or dump the bottle. Mm-hmm. It's a drug and alcohol-free zone. And that's been it's self-policing. There's no people walking around doing.
Speaking of the police, how's that going?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that, and I really think people need to read this, that there is actually a bylaw in Regina that forbids certain activities in public parks.
Yeah, after 11
you can't be there between 11 and 6, 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. You're not supposed to put up tents. You're specifically not allowed to skate in Victoria Park at States. So any kind of skating except ice skating. And there's also things like public assemblies, ceremonies, acts of worship. Those are all forbidden in public parks unless you get specific
permits and things.
And now what's happened is the city has apparently sort of... now I'm getting second hand, so I don't want to make any statements, but the rumor that I'm getting is that the city has basically chosen to not enforce the bylaw, allegedly as a courtesy, but that creates a lot of problems because now, you know, anytime the police want to come, they could come.
For the city of Regina police, my hats are off to them. I it was the big joke because the first night, because that's when I put up the first tent there, and that's when we had all the squad cars down there for the gathering, and by, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock, they all left.
Right.
They realized, you know, this crowd's not a, you know, rambunctious group that's going to damage. They're being very courteous.
I have another clip here.
Oh.
Okay.
I think that they're willing to let us get away without it this time, but I think the fact that there are so many permits in place speaks a lot about an attitude of not necessarily not allowing the things to happen, but certainly discouraging people from trying to get organized in the first.
And on that note, that night I was trying to go because my personal involvement in Woodward's in Vancouver, the squat, we were on the end of the riot police, and it's not a good place to be.
Right.
So I was trying to negotiate our arrest come 11 o'clock. And I went over there and I was talking to him saying, well, you know, you're going to come and tell us we can't have tents, and we're going to tell you that we're not moving, and we can be very civil, and instead of getting crazy and, you know, arresting and, you know, things happening, just tell us what to do and we'll just pack up our stuff when you arrest us and we'll be processed. And they kind of looked at me like I was from Mars. And they said, no. And this is a quote because it was me talking to the police at the time. And they said, no, if anyone bugs you, let us know.
Yeah. I was pretty impressed
with saying, that. And yeah. I'm saying, well, what? This is not the way it's going. How are we going to get media attention if you're not going to arrest us and break up our occupation? Like, and so I think it's beyond just a courtesy. I think it's... you know, the city...
It seems to be quite
city,
supportive.
Yeah, I won't say they're supportive, but they're not...
But I would like to say that this has to do with this corporatization of our language, right? There are individual people in all of these organizations at all levels. I'm sure that there are people even on council who are supportive, but there's other people who aren't. Yeah. And the way the discourse is shaped, we always have to deal with spokespeople. So what do the police think? What do the people from the city think, as opposed to what do individuals right. feel on this issue and how are the negotiations
right.
proceeding?
Right. Jim, you had a clip about that where a young woman was speaking about someone who was working in those corporate buildings across from the park. Is that the next one by any chance?
We can line it up here just
a
second.
You can line it up, yeah. Because, yeah, he talked to her about that and about somebody coming out and talking to her, but, you know, saying that he had to be very careful about what he said.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was a friend of somebody's, but Jim's going to play that for us now.
One of our people, his father works up in these buildings, and he came down and helped set up tents and has been showing a lot of support. And from his word, there is support up there. They just kind of have to keep hush-hush about it.
Well, that's what I said. For every person out there that's actually staying there 24/7,
right.
I don't know the number. I know one of those person represents me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I don't know one of that, you know, you might be in that person. So I think you probably, for every one there, you can add 10 or 20, 50, I don't know.
Right.
You know, that who they're actually representing when they're staying there.
But this bylaw has been used to, oppress a lot of people historically, right? I mean, I know tons of people that have been evicted from parks for various things like skateboarding or, you know, being out there too late. I met one woman recently, just this week actually, through this event, who told me that she's homeless and she was living in a tent in a remote part of Wascana Park. And a few months ago, she had her tent slashed with knives and her stuff was all trampled with mud by the police. Now, that's an allegation, and I'm not saying that's what happened. I don't want to be put on record because this is just hearsay, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows what, but what I will say with confidence is that I hear these stories all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the police in general are corrupt. What I'm saying is we have this sort of conspiracy of silence where people are acting on their own individual sort of values, but they're all sort of being subject to this sort of official position that is concealing what's actually going on. And this being in camp there is forcing people to explode that code of silence and have everybody actually talking. So we're seeing people, like I had a great conversation with a right-wing evangelical Christian the other day who's camped out there.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got like people who have substance abuse problems, we've got people dealing with homelessness, we've got like very liberal green
with
hippies.
Mental health issues.
And all kinds of people.
Yeah.
And they're all coming together and actually hearing what each other is saying for the first time, and that's what's so fascinating.
Well, one of the best things,
as well as the police,
my night out there, and I'll just try to keep this short, is the best thing that happened to me when I was staying there that weekend is about 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm trying to get to sleep. I'm an older guy, right? But right next door, because the tents are really close, there's a group of young guys and girls in there, and they had bongos, and they're just graduated high school, going their first year of university, and you know, and I work with youth, and anyways, the things that they were talking about just gave me so much hope for the future, because a lot of the stuff that I deal with doesn't give me much hope for the future. And they were just exploring these things, and they were questioning one another in a way that, you know, adults do. We don't expect this from, you know, young, you know, I call them, you know, our youth. You know, like, well, what is it? Why are you personally here? What is it that brought you here? And they're questioning each other.
So they're examining their own motives
as well. And it just was very reaffirming on that. But on the flip side, we know we're talking about the police. I'm hoping it's because of, you know, the city's just being you know courteous and respectful of the protesters. But there's also the flip side. You got to look. You know, look what happened in New York when everybody went on the bridge, and they did the mass arrest there. Well, the very next day they tripled their crowd. They had all the unions come down, and there's people watching this. So I hope it's not, you know, out of that, because there is the fear, especially in the United States with the movement so big, and not just in New York but across the states, you know, and they're so paranoid in the states, they actually fear the Arab uprising.
Yeah.
That has happened. That if you go in and move in and start swinging clubs and stuff, you just might end up like Libya and Yemen and Egypt real quick. And with all the militia groups and the Minutemen groups down in the States, they have the means to do that.
Clip that I saw on Facebook, and it was a Marine who got in front of the police at one point in New York who started yelling to be heard, is that I went and fought a war for these people who are behind me in this occupation to have the freedom to do this.
Exactly.
And you're standing in front of me, and I fought this war for you as well. And now they have no rocks, they have no weapons, but you're coming at them to arrest them and to hurt them. And he was basically saying, shame on you. I think he actually said that, like, shame on you for doing this. You have to stop doing this. I fought this war for all of you. And the police were standing there absolutely stunned and didn't know what to say.
So it took a Marine
to get involved,
exactly.
You know, a soldier to get involved who has been at war, who understands how bad it is, to stop the police from doing that sort
as
of
soldiers,
thing.
As soldiers, you know, that's what we go to, you know, to I guess, you know, to defend, but also to bring about in other countries, and to have that stripped from your own people.
We have
really questions.
Two minutes left.
There's,
Nathan.
There's one thing I'd really like to say that I don't want to get missed.
Go ahead.
My favorite thing about this is watching people who have never really had the opportunity to engage in a democratic process suddenly learn how to do it. And so I'm seeing all of these, you know, people coming together, and we have general assemblies every night. And we now have a very large homeless contingent that's camped with us who are participating in the discussion and, you know, having their voices heard. And one woman raised an issue the other day where she said, what do we do if all the tents are taken away? Because those of us who have homes can just go back to their houses.
Right.
Yep. Well, then we have to start identifying, you know, provincially owned buildings, and might have to take it up and actually do squats like they did in the other cities, because we have all the solutions to homelessness, but we don't want it. Our government doesn't want to bring those solutions to bear, so we might have to go back to the old way of actually, you know, squatting in buildings to stay alive.
And on that note, tomorrow between 2 and 4, if you want to go out to Victoria Park in Regina and have a conversation with the people who are in the midst of the occupation and find out what's going on, or add your voice, or take donations of food and supplies and coffee and whatever. You need heaters, too, as well,
you
don't
heaters.
You?
People are getting sick.
They're getting sick, but this is something they're determined to do. Please go ahead and go out there and do what you need to do to make a difference. Take it away, Jim.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."